We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. A radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Since it is All-Star Week, I thought that I would invite some of my people in to talk about the Bulls and talk about All-Star Week. So we put together a great roundtable for you. Of course, our guy Rick Camp, you hear him on the show talking about the Bulls all the time. He's real close to starting the new podcast, right?
Yep.
Because Monday was going to come, and had he not started the podcast, what was going to happen?
Not great stuff for me.
You were going to get hit with a stick by me. So luckily, that's going to start out. Camp, have you figured out a name yet? Or are you?
I think I'm going to roll with Basketball Camp.
He was expressing frustration yesterday about not enough ideas to me as well.
He's got like every idea about the basketball thing.
Basketball Camp is actually good. It's like universal. Everybody can relate to it because everybody went to Basketball Camp as a kid, and it's his name. So
it works out perfectly.
I think that's good.
So Rick Camp is here. Gene McIntosh from It's the Bigs. If you're not up on It's the Bigs, you need to get up on It's the Bigs because these dudes, he and Terrence, are everywhere. They're everywhere. And they are out here representing really hard. So Gene is here. Sean, I want you to move your microphone closer to you.
All right. That's not okay.
No,
now?
You can move it up. Like, just slide it that way. There we go.
How about this? Are we good now?
Yeah, now we're good. Right. Sean Hyken covers the NBA for Bleacher Report. He's been here for a long time covering the Bulls, too. And Cody Westerlund, who is at every Bulls practice and every Bulls game, we are going to talk about the Bulls. Shane, can we load up that cut from First Take? Because I want everyone, in case they didn't hear it or see it, to understand what it's referencing at first. Because this, to me, I think is a real, I think it's a real example of how there's a schism between what the national media, no disrespect, Sean, what the national media and what the local media feel about the Bulls. We got it, Shane? All right, so this morning on First Take, Zach LaVine was there at the table on First Take, and Max asked him this.
Zach, Stephen A. mentioned get you some help. Paxson's built a couple winners in Chicago. Do you have confidence that your GM can get you the help you need?
They might speak differently, man, but, you know, I'm with the team, man. You know, I gotta put the team first. Their table, man. I gotta put the team first. But, you know, it's just a situation we're in right now.
Stop. So Molly Karam and Stephen A. have got to stop everyone from yelling fire Garpax. Campy, I'm going to start with you. When you heard that, when you saw it on Twitter this morning, what was your first thought?
I definitely wasn't surprised, but it makes a lot of sense because the Bulls have been irrelevant, so there hasn't been as much focus here. Now the focus is right here, which means people can express their frustration and have it be heard. And they took advantage of their opportunity on what the highest rated non-live program or non-live game show that ESPN has. And it's pretty much what we've all been hearing on this station for quite a while, just in a TV format, which adds just that extra element to it.
Gene, when you saw it, what'd you think?
Well, that was my introduction to it. And like Campy says, I'm not surprised. The billboard on Lake Street, what, a couple, 3 years ago?
The fire Garpax.
It spoke volumes, man. So I'm not about, you know, taking money out of the brothers' pockets, but I think Garpax I think they've got enough to last them a lifetime. So it may be about that time, man. I'm there with Cody most of the time, and this whole thing starts from the top. You know, Jim Boylan gets a lot of blame. even though he's Jim Boylan. But, yeah, this thing starts at the top, man. And Pac said if it didn't work, he was out of there, right?
Yeah, kind of. But they also said that they wanted to be a playoff team. And then they were like, no, we didn't say that. I'm like,
but you have
yeah,
to,
you did.
You have to remember, though, that they had a few guys get injured, so they can't evaluate who they have.
It's very frustrating to hear some of those things because it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Cody, what about you? What's your reaction to that?
I felt like this mattered, and we're in this just social media bubble so often where we scream on Twitter, and I say we, whether it's media members, fans, outside observers, people across the country, about anything and everything as it pertains to Bulls fans' anger that comes in fireguard packs on Twitter. It doesn't matter. Like, the Bulls don't care that some people are mad on Twitter. Right. You know what I mean? I think it's reflective of a fair segment of the fan base, but like, this felt like it mattered. National TV matters. This organization is a very smart business operation. That's why they're worth so much money, and they understand how something like that extends to their brand, and I really think it's a nightmare scenario for them. And again, I just get back to that word. This is something to me that feels like it matters.
The thing that was the most striking to me about that clip, and I'm in the same boat as Gene, I had not seen that or heard that until you played it for us live on the air just now. But I mean, okay, the fans chanting fire gar packs, like whenever they film one of these shows at a live thing, fans are going to chant whatever they chant. I'm not really, you know, that part didn't really stand out to me. Zach's answer where he's like, you know what, I'm with the organization. That was sort of, remember the Three Alphas year, the end of season press conference, our buddy Nick Friedell asks Pax specifically, what is one thing that you think Fred Hoiberg does well that's why he should be the coach? And Paxson basically says, you know, we made a commitment to Fred. He's under contract. That basically was what that Zach LaVine answer felt like, where they said, do you trust John Paxson to build a contender?
Yeah.
And he basically said, well, you know, I'm with the organization. I've got to go with, like, it wasn't exactly a ringing endorsement of his team building ability.
I feel bad for Zach in that moment because he's in a rough spot. Yeah. Like, that's a hard, like, what's he going to say? But what I think is really key in that soundbite is that that wasn't some planned thing.
Right.
That was them reacting in the moment to Max's question, saying, you know what, Zach? How about we answer it for you?
Right.
We'll answer the question. The answer is no. That's where I think this franchise is, and that what has me worried about where they go. You guys are around it every day. Cody, Gene, you guys are at practices. You're covering games of this Bulls team. What's stuff that we don't know about how this whole thing worked? Cody, I'm going to start with you.
Well, I just think the dissatisfaction and the misunderstanding even in the players' eyes at times with, like, Jim Boylan, you know what I mean? And whether it's substitution patterns, timeout usage, game strategies, like, these guys in the locker room at times feel exasperated by answering the same questions and answering questions that they don't feel like should fall on their plate. Like, why wasn't this adjustment made? Well, hey, I don't know why is basically what these players are saying. That's not my job to come up with the game plan and adjust it on the fly, even though they have opinions, obviously. And after the fact, you go back in retrospect and see what you should have done. So I think the players, like, people always talk about the Bulls players, like, are they quitting on the season or something? Like, these guys are playing really hard. They're just not playing well. Right. And they are very confused, I think, at times by some of the day-to-day operations. When you look at it, you talk about games and practices. That's how I would view that question.
Gene, is that your experience with the players been similar?
100%, man. I take a guy like Thaddeus Young, for example. And he came out and said, this isn't what he came here for. Like, the whole plan was different. What we talked about in the summer is totally different than what's going on now. And, of course, there have been injuries. Pax saying, you know, he can't evaluate what he has. That's BS. If we can evaluate it, and, like, you know, that's why we're on this side. That's why we're not in the front office. But everybody knows you can evaluate what you have. Not like Cody said, again, I think those guys are overwhelmed. They are playing hard, but a lot of the times they're overmatched. And then Jim Boylan is in over his head, man. I think, I don't know what type of conversation he had with Michael Reinsdorf on those road trips on the plane back. He must have, you know, gotten in his iPad or in his notebook and been, I don't know what went on there, but something went on there that we don't know about, and he's got his job security. So I just think those guys, like Cody said, they're playing hard, but I don't think they believe in
the Paxson comment on not being able to evaluate the roster really turns me off, because if that's the prism they're viewing it through, what can we evaluate then? Well, it's the first 9 games of the season when the Bulls started 3-6 with a pretty much completely healthy roster, and it was a really soft schedule. And again, they won 1 out of every 3 games there. So that, if that's what you want me to evaluate, I'll look at that and say, well, that didn't cut it, so it's not working. You don't want me to evaluate in the last couple of months because Wendell's out, Lowry's out, whoever's out. So that's BS, really, in many ways, it feels like.
Well, the thing about the we can't evaluate what we have, first of all, there is no team in the league that has zero injuries to key players. Every team deals with something throughout the course of a season, and most other teams find a way to be like, okay, you know, this is what we have. These are the guys we think we're going to keep. But also, the other thing to me is, some of these guys, like, they have these injuries. You know, they traded for Otto Porter. They knew he kind of had injury issues. I still thought that was a good trade because, you know, he's a talented player and, you know, he was kind of worth the gamble. Wendell Carter now both years has had injuries. At a certain point, if guys aren't healthy enough to be evaluated, shouldn't that be part of the evaluation, that these are guys that can't stay healthy?
I agree with you. It's one of the things that we brought up. Campy and I were talking about this. The fact that you say that you can't evaluate Lauri Markkanen. Well, his injury history is significant in that evaluation process.
And the Bulls' injury history, period, is there.
I would ask this, too, of you guys. I think Paxson means we can't evaluate them in a team setting, you know, because they're not all healthy. We can still evaluate these guys individually for the most part. Who do you think has improved the most? Who hasn't improved? Who has regressed in these last couple of years with these young guys? Because when I look at it, to me, it's like, Wendell Carter came out, it felt like guns a-blazing kind of early on in his tenure, like he was playing his best basketball offensively right when Fred Hoiberg got fired because they kind of emboldened him to do so. Mm-hmm. And he was just talking this morning at the Rising Stars Challenge media availability. He won't be playing this weekend, but he did receive the honor. He was talking about how he wants to shoot 2 or 3 3-pointers a game. Well, that just wasn't allowed for a really long time.
Right.
So to me, it's like, he's shown some improvement, but not enough, right, considering the trajectory he started at. Markkanen's regressing. Like, where do you fall on some of these young guys?
I feel like Markkanen is taking a huge step back. I really do. And one of the things that we looked at is statistically, he has more single-digit scoring output games this season than in the last two. That, to me, is crazy. For a guy who hasn't played most of the season, for him to have 9 games this year where he doesn't score in double digits, that's not a player who's stepping forward.
Well, in this new age NBA, with player development being such a factor, how much of that is player development and how much of that is Lauri himself? Because me and Terrence always, shout out to Terrence, my partner Terrence Tomlin over there, but we talk about it all the time, and it's like, if you're a number one or two option, okay, the play comes in, whatever the play call is. But at some point, skip that play. Give me the ball where I know I can get to my spot and score the basketball. And I haven't seen that from Lauri at all. So his regression has been the biggest for me.
I really think part of it is Lowry's aggressiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been too passive. I think if he just is aggressive, he can get back to that scoring output that they need. But I think that part is what falls on him, even when the game plan doesn't call for him to maybe be in the best spots that he wants.
Yep.
Well, okay, my thing with the Lauri thing is so hard to pin down to me, because we've seen in the past, not this year so much, but we've seen in the past, you know, he had that stretch in like January and February last year where he was putting up 20 and 10s for like a month straight. And then in, you know, his rookie season, he looked like, okay, this might be a future franchise player. The talent is there. We know that the talent is there because we've seen what he can do. It's just, and I said this before the season, if the Bulls are going to get to where they need to get to, I mean, everybody talks about, you know, Zach LaVine is kind of the face of the franchise. If the Bulls are going to get to where they get to, or where they need to get to, Lauri Markkanen has to be their best player, because the prototype of the kind of player he is exactly the kind of guy that you want to have, you know, in, you know, with the way the NBA is going right now. And so you need him to do that consistently. And I don't know if it's a confidence thing with him. I don't know if it's coaching. You guys, obviously, I'm not in Chicago anymore, so you guys obviously watch the Bulls more on a day-to-day basis than I do, but I'm not sure whether it's like the coaches aren't putting him in the right spot, or if his confidence is just shot, or like what's going on with him. But he's a guy where, like, you know how good he can be, but you need to see him do it on that consistent basis. When he just hasn't done that.
And the thing is, that's what's so frustrating, is that it's not 100% one thing or another, because you look at Markkanen's confidence going down, but it's also, it almost seems like when Boylan looks at, okay, this is what a shot chart should look like, but he doesn't know how they should, each guy needs to get to those shots. And I think that's maybe the biggest, the most damning thing on their offense, whether you want to put that on Boylan or Chris Fleming, because there are things that Markkanen can do that it just seems like he either doesn't put himself in the position to do, or the offense doesn't put him in the position to do those things. So it's a lot of the context around, do you just look at the actual shot chart in and of itself and say, we need threes and layups, but not say, oh, well, one thing Markkanen actually can do better than most seven-footers that can shoot is actually come off screens and get a decent enough shot up, be able to square himself to shoot pretty well, as opposed to a lot of your other seven-footers when you think of a maybe stereotypically like a guy like Ryan Anderson who just stand there and wait, catch and shoot, that's it. Get Lowry moving a little bit, and that should be able to help, but that just doesn't seem to be a function of the offense right now.
We're in the middle of a Bulls roundtable. I have Rick Camp here. I have Gene McIntosh here. I have Sean Hyken and Cody Westerlund. These guys cover the NBA, and they cover the Bulls. They are around it. They're closer to it than I am, so I wanted to lean on their expertise. We need to take a timeout. When we come back, let's talk about the elephant in the room. I want to talk about Jim Boylan and what type of job he's done as a coach. I'll ask our four experts next here on The Score.
Getting back to you and these damn Chicago Bulls.
Bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern. Join Northwestern basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Remaining home opponents include Illinois, Penn State, and Minnesota. Single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. We have a crazy, like, superhero, like, mashup happening on the next show. So McNeil and Parkins are out because Park's baby came home and McNeil's getting his shoulder reattached or something like that. So get this. Spiegel, Haw, and Kendall Gill are going to be doing a show from Bandit in the West Loop, 841 West Randolph. So they'll be there live. If you want to go have lunch someplace or an early dinner, go check them out between 2 and 6. Right now, I am doing a Bulls roundtable. I've got Rick Camp. I've got Gene McIntosh of It's the Bigs here. Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report here. And our buddy Cody Westerlund, who covers the Bulls for 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. I brought it up before we went to break that I was going to ask you guys about Jim Boylan. So, Cody, I'm going to start with you. What does he do well?
I think he does a really good job of creating game plans. His X and O's mind is very good when he has time to plan. When it's an every other day setup, anything, couple days off, he gets that. The Bulls have been held their own in the first quarter. I don't think we should ever say they've come out gangbusters every night. But if you look at this team, a lot of their problems come in the third quarter. That's kind of been the nightmare quarter for the Bulls. And that speaks to the other team making halftime adjustments and the Bulls not adjusting well enough. So I think he truly does care about his players, and I think he does a really good job of creating game plans off the bat. I don't think he does as good of a job adjusting on the fly.
Okay,
start there.
Let me flip it over then. What doesn't he do well?
I don't like how he makes in-game adjustments. I think he's a little stubborn at times. I think that's reflected earlier in the year when they wouldn't change their pick-and-roll coverages sometimes. Chris Paul got him good in Oklahoma City with a string of three-pointers because the Bulls kept doing the same thing over and over again. So being hard-headed and stubborn, that's not helpful in that sense. And look, the offensive struggles, the Bulls are a bottom five offense in the NBA. It doesn't matter what your background is. When you're a head coach, that falls on you. So I don't think he's done a good enough job of getting guys to the right spots on the floor. And then when it comes to the timeout use, the substitution patterns, those in-game decisions, just the logistics of the game, he's kind of all over the map at times, and that stunts the Bulls' rhythm, I think, in some ways. So I don't think he plans ahead enough in game sometimes. And I think that can really get you in a tight spot when it's a close game.
Gene, what are players telling you about their relationship with Boylan? And what are you seeing as far as what his deficiencies as a head coach might be?
It's tough because nowadays with social media and all of these different outlets for guys to get, you know, their true feelings out, I think a lot of guys are reserved from what they really want to say. But, again, I talked to Denzel Valentine a lot, and, you know, he started the season getting no tick, injuries happen, not enough able bodies, so he had to get in. But a guy like him, if you can look at Denzel and tell what he thinks about Jim Boylan. Now, if he's not going to go on the record and say he's not going to down Jim Boylan, but – you know, he feels like he should play. He feels like he hasn't gotten the right chance. And for me, it seems like Jim Boylan has his type of players. It's like a Shaq Harrison, a Chris Dunn, a Archie Diacono, a Chandler Hutchinson, guys who I won't say necessarily, well, not as skilled, but, you know, they have a lot of, you know, his favorite thing, heart, passion, hustle, and stuff like that. So
spirit. Soul.
Take the words out of my mouth, Sean. So I think that's, you know, Jim Boylan. I think he may be, not maybe, but he is loyal to a fault. Like, that's, you need to play the best players. And with this new NBA game where you say threes and layups, again, back to a guy like Denzel Valentine.
Very different people.
That's Terrence rubbing off on me, man. Denzel, we know he was AP Player of the Year at Michigan State. And when you get to the NBA and they're telling you to basically take the mid-range game out of the game scheme entirely, then you're taking Denzel Valentine's like 70% of where he's effective away. So I think, you know, being able to adjust and not just taking, like, Chris Fleming brought the Brooklyn Nets, you know, philosophy kind of over, and it's not working. So I think Jim Boylan needs to I don't know, man. I the guys are not happy. It's flat out obvious. And again, they're not gonna go on record and say they're not feeling Jim Boylan. But if you stick around the locker room, the guys were taking shots at each other early in the season, not naming each other, but you could tell that some guys were saying we play much better together. Then once Cody said first half, they're in the game. They're up 10. They're up 12. Third quarter, the opposition coaches said, "Now, come on, guys, it's the Bulls. Turn it up a little bit and let's put these guys away." And then it turns into hero ball. Zach has to get his 25 a game. And
I think an example of this is Thad Young didn't get traded at the deadline. Thought he could, just wasn't a big market for him. And he's saying the right things in the interview after the deadline passes. And we just ask him point blank, like, when you woke up this morning, did you want to be traded or did you want to stay in Chicago? And he's basically just like, to paraphrase him, I just go where they tell me. You know, like, you can read into that what that means. Right. As Gene just said, like, they're not going to go out there and throw a coach or anyone else under the bus. But, like, it's the things they don't say and how they say them when they're in the middle that matter and you can read into it. And there just doesn't seem to be a lot of faith in just the process here at all times.
Yeah, you give credit to the players because you can't ever say that effort really is an issue. They're always trying. It's just when you're putting forth that kind of effort, you want your coaching staff to put you in the best position to succeed. And it just doesn't feel like, A, that Jim Boylan does that, and it sure doesn't feel that the players think that Jim Boylan does that or is capable of doing that, especially in that second half when adjustments are necessary.
I thought the Denzel point was good, Gene, because, like, he's been really confused by why he wasn't used. And I think what Denzel wants, and this probably goes for every player in there, we can say with certainty, is just like a basic standard. You know what I mean? Like, when he got out there and got in the rotation, he produced offensively.
Right.
We already knew his defensive limitations. That hasn't changed since he showed up in Chicago,
right,
really at all. So we know what he can and can't do. And he was helping them at the time because his offensive output was outweighing his defensive deficiencies, or at least giving the Bulls what they needed with the scoring punch. And then all of a sudden you're just out. And Denzel, I don't feel like he ever got a good explanation other than just who he is as a defensive player.
My biggest problem with Boylan is that he's just inconsistent with what he says and what he does. I remember earlier in the season, he had somebody, you know, I forget who it was, but somebody wasn't playing well, and they asked him after the game, like, "What? Why did you keep that guy in?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't like yanking people." And then, like, a week later, that whole thing with Zach LaVine, where he pulled him, and Zach was unhappy about it, and he pulled him in and basically sat him for, like, 10 minutes at a time. And then, you know, after that, you know, maybe, like, a month or so ago, he didn't play somebody because he said that person wasn't healthy enough to play, and he's making sure his guys don't get hurt. And then, like, the next game, Daniel Gafford goes down with an ankle injury, and Boylan, like, lets two possessions go by. I think this was against Dallas, and, like, eventually Rick Carlisle had to, like, take a foul, be like, "Hey, dude, take your guy out.
Off the floor."
So it's like he'll say the right things at one point. He'll be like, "Oh, no, I don't like to yank people. I like to keep guys' confidence up. I don't like to have my guys out there playing hurt." And then he'll just do the complete opposite, and it just, like, changes on a day-to-day basis what he does and what he says.
So I will go on record. Denzel is one of the guys that I talk to a lot. And I asked him earlier in the season, "Well, what's going on? Have you talked to Jim Boylan? Have you sat down one-to-one? And have you talked to him and had a man-to-man?" And he said he did. And he said he basically went in and told the coaches he's not feeling the way that they use him. They've taken away part of what's made him successful all of his basketball career. And he said they didn't like it. And he's been in the doghouse ever since. And I talked to Sean Respert, and Sean said it's just my job to make sure that I keep Denzel's mind right, keep him focused, because this is his contract year. And I said, well, Denzel, do you think about this being your contract year and, you know, about the money? And he said, obviously I do. But he said, the thing that I'm worried about, that I care about most, is my health. Because a lot of people don't understand that it wasn't just an ankle injury. He had reconstructive ankle surgery. So he had to learn how to walk first. He had to learn how to run. Then you get back into basketball shape. So when stuff like that is going on through your mind, the physical part is secondary. It's a mind thing. And when you got guys, like Cody said, not really giving you a balance, if I'm not going to play, I'm not going to play. If I'm part of the second unit, I'm part of the second unit. But if I'm in, I'm out. I'm at the end of the bench, I'm starting. It's a mind thing.
Gene, I can't remember. Was it you or was it Terrence's video of the crowd? It was Terrence's video. So yeah, Terrence had a video earlier this year. By the way, Terrence Tomlin, It's the Bigs, Gene McIntosh, the covers that they do is amazing. People were questioning Terrence's veracity when he put out the video. It was close to game time, and there were a ton of empty seats at the United Center. I feel like this is the first year in forever where I've gone to the United Center and I see dark suites. I see a lot of seats in the 300 and 500 level that are not filled. What do you guys think that means from the fan base if they're not showing up to games at the UC? Because everything surrounding Bulls basketball is great. All the entertainment stuff, all the in-house stuff, the basketball itself is what sucks. So what does it mean that fans are starting to not show up at the UC?
Lawrence, it means everything. I think the most instructive point to remember in this is when Jerry Reinsdorf did finally move on from the late Jerry Krause, was also dovetailing with poor attendance at the United Center then back in 2003, I believe it was. And money matters. We know this. And even though the Bulls have been poor in the past couple seasons in this rebuild, they were still raking in the cash.
Definitely.
And you look at it, their capacity last year at the United Center was around 96-something percent. Now it's 90%. So you do the math in there, 6% drop in a building like that, mm-hmm. like that's 1,000, 2,000 fans a game. At some point, that's a lot of money. So that matters. So I think the attendance thing, like if you're a Bulls fan, you speak by whether you show up or not. And sometimes when you're in the background of First Take, I guess, too.
I don't know how much of it is actually a money thing, because I feel like most of those tickets get sold to corporate partners. So I think the money is being made right off those tickets regardless. It's really an optics thing because, you know, when video like Terrence's video goes viral, or maybe, you know, somebody else posts a picture of, you know, the United Center where the, you know, there's like 7,000 empty seats at tip off. Like the optics of that are just bad. Like you don't want, you're the Chicago Bulls. You're in one of the biggest markets in the league. You have, you know, one of the most, you know, historically, you know, prestigious franchises. You don't want it to be going around, oh, look, this team is so irrelevant that their home fans aren't even showing up to games. Like from an optics standpoint, forget how much money they're making or not making, because I still think that they're probably making plenty of money on this team, but they just, like the optics of it, like the way that looks and the PR aspect of it, that might be what makes them change more than anything.
I don't think optics matter much to them. Like there would have been change a long time ago if optics mattered. Like we've been having empty seat things for like since the first year of the rebuild. I think it comes down to money. Like rich people love being rich. They got rich because they made smart decisions and because at the margins they did well. Like they care about 6% of people in revenue. So I think that goes farther than the optics, in my opinion.
Think about this too with the attendance and just being 23rd in capacity. Listen to the markets and teams that are below the Bulls, the only seven that are, or six that are: Orlando, Memphis, Phoenix, Washington, Charlotte, Minnesota, Detroit. They're either the smallest markets where there's minimal interest by NBA standards, or it's teams that are just straight in the tank. Is a damning list.
I'm a little surprised Memphis is that low, because that team is fun.
Yes.
They are fun, but they're going to have to ramp up on this for sure. Gene, what about you? I'll give you the final word on this.
Well, again, me and Terrence, you know, we talk all the time, and the Bulls have turned into that team where you come to watch the opposition or the star players from the other team. So the other night when we played the Pelicans, and we know Zion is the hype right now. And there were so many empty seats there. And I sat on it for a minute. But like you said, it's just like the fans. So I think the United Center is like a place for family night. People don't even come to watch the games. It's the
it's something to do.
Yeah, it's you come in, you feel the aura. I remember we talked to Melo, Carmelo, when he was in. Who did he play for? Oh, was he in Oklahoma or Houston? I don't know. Whoever he made his last trip here,
I think it was Oklahoma.
Was it Oklahoma?
Was he here with Portland?
No, it wasn't Portland. It was.
I think it was when he was with Oklahoma, because I remember there was a big deal when he was here.
Okay. Now we got it. Me and Terrence got a chance to chop it up with him for a minute, and it was funny because our first question to everybody we say, we like, you know, you're in the house that Mike built, right? And they're like, yeah. Melo said, man, it's funny you said that, because when I walked in this building the first time, I could feel the aura. And you know, that sounds cliche, but it's real. So I think that's what the United Center had become. Like Cody said, this is going to be the sixth rebuild, and since maybe the third. I think that's what the United Center had become. It's become family night, just a night to get out. Benny the Bull, the Dunkin' Donuts race,
yeah.
The Portillo's hot dog, free throw miss. It's a travesty, a sham, and a mockery going on right there with Bulls basketball. And for this to be the third largest market, the fans deserve better. The city deserves better, and us as media members, we deserve better. Man, I'm Bulls for life, but It disgusts me when I have to come in there and watch that terrible brand of basketball, man.
Gentlemen, I appreciate your time. Thank you guys for a lively and informative roundtable on the Bulls. I'm glad to get my man Gene in here.
We overdue, Lawrence.
Facts.
Hey, again, shout out to my partner Terrence, man. He holds me down. We hold each other down. Shout out to Sean Hyken, My boy Cody. It's always great to see Cody in the Jim Boylan press conference with the timeout question. I'm looking forward to it every time.
Because Cody doesn't play, man. And, like, the thing is that Cody's not, you know, Cody and I had a conversation about this a little while back. When I used to cover the Bears, like, it was kind of known that I might go off. I like Cody's style better. Cody's like a sniper.
Yeah.
Like, he is keeping his blood pressure low.
Yeah.
He is honed in on something specific. And he asks a great question with facts and follow-ups, and usually it has the Bulls coach perplexed when he asks those questions.
I think it would take a full segment, another full segment, to break all that down.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Cody's great at asking a question in a way that it's so clear exactly what he's asking.
Exactly.
There's no way you could dance around it unless you're trying to dance around it.
And the perfect amount of disdain in his voice, too.
I agree with that. So, gentlemen, thanks for coming in here and being a part of it. I really appreciate you guys' time. I know with All-Star Weekend, everyone's got stuff to do. Sean, I think I'll see you on TV later on tonight on NBC Sports Chicago. Rick Camp, our resident Bulls guy, hanging in there and being a part of this too. It's appreciated. This segment is brought to you by Campland RV. Rick Camp doesn't own it, but he would go get one if you offered it to him. Buying made easy. It's Campland RV's annual RV open house, February 21st through the 23rd. Don't miss your chance to receive discounted RV show prices on select models. Call us at 219-787-1040 or visit our website at camplandrv.com. For details, go to camplandrv.com. RV buying made easy. I need to take a break. When we come back, I'll let you know what I'm going to do for the rest of this All-Star weekend, and we'll send you out to Bandit in the West Loop, where we got a really fun, interesting combination of guys doing a show. I'll explain next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.